Welcome to a Just My Show bonus podcast. We're going to cover some new ground right now. We're always talking about TV shows and movies and things like that. Well, the kids are back in school, so I thought for a change, why not set a good example, put down the remote control for just a few minutes and actually pick up a book. It's a wild idea, but I have the perfect literary figure that we want to celebrate right now. Leroy Encyclopedia Brown's been solving cases for 25 cents plus expenses since 1963. That's when Edgar Award-winning author Donald Sobel put out the first book in the series called Encyclopedia Brown, Boy Detective. It's, of course, become one of the most successful series of all time for young readers and has made the very rare crossover from literature to pop culture. We all grew up reading his work. Donald Sobel is on the line. Hey, Don.
Hi, Eric.
So Don, I read the new book, which I enjoyed very much, and I went back and read some of the earlier stuff, which I hadn't read in years, of course. And I felt two things. I felt nostalgic and I felt stupid because there's about 10 cases in each book, and I probably got partially right one or two of them. Should someone over 30 years old be doing a little better than that?
Well, I'll tell you a big secret, Eric. I couldn't solve the mysteries if I didn't write them. you know my worst secret.
So then reading the new book, I saw, you know, there's some modern touches, but it has a very similar feel to all the older ones, even the very first one from 1963. How is it that what's the formula that makes them all feel so timeless, and that, you know, they must feel as fresh to a new reader that just discovers them now?
Well, you hit it right on the nose. I did my best throughout the series, from the first book onward, to keep them dateless, and so that no matter how long they might be popular and read, the books in the first book and the 25th book and all between wouldn't be dated. Now, I make some bloopers over the years. I once, back in, oh, I don't know, I think maybe 1950, I wrote about a very expensive car that cost $6,000. And the publishers around 20 years later or 30 years later were good enough to change that and delete it. That's one of two or three mistakes I've made, but I try to hold to the theory that you can't date a book if you want it to last.
But actually, the follow-up question, that 25 cents plus expenses, that's a heck of a deal in 2007. Do you ever think about raising encyclopedias rates at all?
That's a very good question. I get letters from youngsters saying, how come? Why only 25 cents? Well, it started off at 25 cents, and it was okay for many years, maybe 5 or 6 years, and then inflation took it away. And to change every book would be an enormous amount of work. So we just left it, and we hope that that's an advantage. He doesn't seem to be greedy. He'll take 25 cents because he feels he wants to do the work for youngsters and not take them for a ride and be greedy. It worked out.
The other thing, obviously now you know that it's gone on for years and years and all new generations discover it all the time. Back then, you didn't know that. Did you ever think, well, maybe I'd have him get older as the series went on?
I've thought of that, and again, youngsters have written to me, because certain books have characters that do get older. My problem was, if a youngster reads the fifth book, let's say, or 20th book, and then reads the first book, he's totally confused. How come he got younger, or he stayed the same? If I keep writing older and older children into the book, it will confuse the reader, I think, because he doesn't know what the previous books are. He doesn't know there's a stability in the books that doesn't exist in life. I've chosen to keep them the same age, and right or wrong, I'm committed to that, Eric.
So unlike some other long-running series, you know, the Hardy Boys, for example, a mystery series for young readers, to my knowledge, it wasn't actually the same person that wrote all of them. In your case, you created the character, you write all the books yourself. How important is that to you to keep control over the franchise?
Well, I like to keep the books the same, and I don't know that ever it'd be easy for someone to come in and try to duplicate the essence of the book, the spirit of the book. So I do it all. I do it more slowly over the years, each book. Well, not each book, but every 10 years I start to get slower and slower. But you have to persist. I persist because it's a lot of fun. You know, it's the most fun I do in writing.
How, on average, how long does it take you to put one of these together?
Well, the first book took 2 weeks, and that's because I've been thinking about it for 2 years. And after that, for some reason, every book took the same. 6 months, give or take 3 or 4 days. I don't know why that works out. Maybe it's a built-in program that I have for the Encyclopedia Brown books. But 6 months is pretty much the standard time, Ellen.
Well, let's go back to 1963 for a second. You said you'd thought about it for a long time. You'd already written other mysteries. What made you want to write about a boy detective, and anything in particular that made you come up with the idea?
Well, the idea came from a newspaper column I did called 2-Minute Mysteries for the Associated Press, and they were syndicated in this country and abroad. And after a while, you know, you get the feel I'm bleeding myself dry. I love doing them. I would have done them, except I sort of got run down. And so I cast around for something else to use that type of mystery, a short mystery with the solution detached from the body of the story. And I thought of a children's book. And then it went from there.
And when you wrote this first book, did you ever think, hey, this could go on for a while, or did that surprise you, or were you just focusing on the first book?
I was both focusing on the first book. I wanted that book to be a success with the young readers. I also thought if it were a success, I could write more books. The two are parallel, wanting to do the best job I can, as I always do, as any author does, and wanting it to be a series, and it worked out that way.
And what's your biggest intent, to make people think, young kids, entertain them? What's your priority?
Entertainment. I have no expectations of solving the world's problems in children's books. I want the children to be entertained. I don't put messages in the books, at least subliminal messages I go along with. That is, crime doesn't pay. Violence is wrong. I use violence in the book, but I always mitigate it with humor. When Sally punches out the villain, it's done humorously, so the youngster doesn't feel that if someone is really hurt. There's never any bloodshed. There's never any hurt that is permanent. Bugs gets off the ground after a while and goes home, and the kids surmise this.
And actually, to follow up on that, the other thing that always happens is they always, Bugs or whoever it is, always confesses. And then, again, it doesn't seem like they give back whatever they stole, and they don't get in too much trouble. Is that, where'd you come up with the idea that they would always fess up?
They'd always confess? Is that what you
just said? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I don't want to get too involved with penalizing anybody. Encyclopedia solves the crime, and if there's a stolen jewel or stolen bike, the bike is returned. Each story completes itself without going into a jury trial or without going into proper punishing. It has to be a complete story without any tails out or anything else involved in the future. It is a conclusion.
And obviously,
it's closed.
Obviously, the stories are fictional, but were there any real life inspirations? You know, did you know a Bugs Meany type when you were a kid, or anything your kids did that played into this?
Youngsters keep asking me that, Eric. Mostly about Encyclopedia Brown, but also about Bugs Meany, who is apparently the most popular character in the series. I have to say, none of my characters are based on real life, except maybe Encyclopedia Brown. He is the boy I would have loved to be when I was 10. And I knew and could not be, so maybe this is compensation. I write about him.
So, in the earlier books, we don't know everything about Idaville. We know it's a seaside town. We know how many, movie theaters or this and that there are. You know, now we know it's in Florida. Did you always have Florida in your mind, and why did you decide to tell people where it is?
If Florida got in, and that's my blunder. I don't know that it ever got in, but I try to make Idaville any place along the sea, both west and east. I didn't want to put it down in somebody's neighborhood. Actually, I thought Idaville was a singular name. I made it up. My mother's name was Ida, and later on, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, I found out there were a couple other Idavilles in the United States. That's my fault. I should have checked it out. But I wanted it to be a rather singular place that could be applied to any area in the country. And youngsters say, hey, that's a model of a seaside town I visited. Not to be specific, not Florida. And Florida got in there, and that's my fault.
So Sally, Encyclopedia Sidekick, obviously a very strong female character. Was there a need at the time for better female characters in books for kids? Or was that a conscious effort to make a sidekick a girl?
Oh, yes. I tried. What I tried to do with Encyclopedia was to make him likable. I found from my elementary days that the smartest kid in the class was generally a nice kid, but he never really got into the group, the rest of the class. He had friends, but he didn't have any close friends. Maybe he had one friend. Everybody else had several friends. I tried to make Encyclopedia with a shortcoming so he'd look more human. I didn't want him to be one of these super boys that ran into a phone booth and came out in his underwear and with an S on his shirt or something to be a super boy. He had to have some failing, and I decided I'd try it with a woman, a girl. And my inspiration was a TV show that had been successful in England and had been adopted and shown in this country called The Avengers, in which a man and a woman were detectives. They solved crimes, and the woman was the one who was the karate expert, and she did most of the bungling. And I thought when I sent the manuscript off to publishers that I surely get turned down on the basis Sally is not what we want for children in our children's books. Girls and women in those days, 1961 when I wrote it, weren't supposed to perspire, and they were supposed to be very delicate, and if they did something athletic, well, they'd have to be awfully good to be accepted. So I thought maybe I'd be turned down from that point of view, but I wasn't. I was turned down plenty of times, but not because of Sally. She was never mentioned in the rejection.
How many different people did you pitch this to before it finally got picked up?
The first book was rejected by 24 publishers. And I'd just about given up hope. I had two more publishers that I thought might need the book. And the first one of the two I sent it to accepted it.
And I guess the others are probably pretty sorry now that they turned it down.
Well, that's kind.
So I said in my intro that Encyclopedia Brown has sort of transcended from books into pop culture. Do you get that feeling that it's really bigger? I mean, people even, you know, my age will reference it in conversations. And do you feel like it's sort of bigger than just literature?
Well, I like to think it is, but I never had, you're bringing up something entirely new, Eric. I never thought of it as being of importance outside the book field. But it's nice for someone to tell me maybe it is, maybe it's read as a pop culture element, and I'm grateful for the remark.
And that leads to my next question. When I was in school, we had they showed us Encyclopedia Brown film strips. Now, and of course, there's never been a movie, and I know, you know, I've read different accounts of this. I understand, I guess, maybe just tell me the backstory. You currently do not own the media rights, is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
And that's not unusual. I don't like it when that happens because I want the person who created the character to have the control over what happens to it. But, you know, Paul McCartney doesn't own all the songs he wrote for the Beatles. What would you – all these big names I've read, Chevy Chase, Ridley Scott, Johnny Carson at one point, I guess was interested in making something out of this. There was an HBO show, which I guess you weren't involved in. But when will the rights ever come back to you, and would you like to see a movie made if it's done the right way?
I can't talk on what I like to see them come back to me. I'll have to pass that with your permission.
Of course.
It doesn't sound like something I should say. I don't have the rights, and that's a long story. I just have to leave it alone if you allow me to.
Absolutely. Over the years, you must have had, you know, a tons of people come up to you and comment to you about how much the books meant to them. You made some references to it before. What do people say, and has anyone ever come up to you and said, I became an author because of you? And I'm more interested in knowing, has anyone ever come up and said, I became a detective because of you?
No, but I'll tell you, the most rewarding letters I get are from parents, or a few parents over the years who have told it to me in real life, not in letters. they thank me because they say Encyclopedia Brown interested their child who was a non-reader in books. And when I get that kind of report, then I know it's all been worthwhile.
What else, any little other facts that I wouldn't know to ask about the series?
It's a joy, Eric. To get letters for youngsters is a positive joy. And I enjoy doing that kind of work. It's the favorite of all the things I do, and has been over the years. And I'm grateful for Encyclopedia Brown. I feel like he's one of my children. Really.
And are they going to keep coming? What's the plan?
Well, I'd like to. I can't predict. I'm not young enough to make a prediction. I could do them for another 10 years, but I hope to.
Sounds good. Donald Sobel, good luck with the new book. It's Encyclopedia Brown Cracks the Case. Everyone should get them. I don't care how old you are. And thanks for talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the talk.